Joss Norton, you have been chosen to receive all of my power.
Who are you?
I am the last of the great wizards of yore, chosen to fight on the side of righteousness. I am seeking a new champion to pass on all of my powers to defeat the seven deadly sins. But I must warn you, choose wisely, for such a calling is great and the suffering is high.
Okay.
You don't want to think about it? I just said that it's a long road of suffering.
Nope.
All right, you must lay your hand upon the staff and say, Shazam!
Shazam!
Woo! Check out my muscles, and my suit lights up like Dad's cell phone. Shazam!
This is not a party trick. You have a mighty responsibility to protect the innocents against the forces of darkness who will line up against you.
Shazam!
Do not abuse the power of the ancients.
What? Lightning power? Shazam!
This may have been a mistake.
Thanks, Mr. Wizard Guy. I gotta get home. Maybe I'll do a podcast for my dad or something. This voice sounds so cool.
Wait.
Sorry, mister. I'll clean that up.
Well, I've got to stop giving these powers to children.
Welcome to the conversation.
Welcome to Screenfish.
Shazam!
Welcome to Screenfish Radio. We are thrilled this week to talk about
Shazam!
There you go. Shazam, directed by David Sandberg and starring Zachary Levy. Shazam tells the story of 14-year-old Billy Batson, a young man who finds himself on a magic subway that takes him to a wizard who asks him to say his name, who gets all the magic as he has to fight literally the forces of evil. This week, we are thrilled to have Derek Wong back and Mira Ibrahim, this week's newbie, I guess.
Yeah,
welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Just a reminder, if you are listening at home, that this podcast is rated S for spoilers, so you should know that going into the episode. But Mira, Derek, what did you think of Shazam?
I liked it. I thought it was a really fun, lighthearted look at some pretty real issues, but it was kind of a fun way to approach it. I would say, to me, it was a combo of like Big and maybe Superman sort of together. That's how I felt. So Big the movie, gravitas of Superman and the levity of Big.
Yeah. Wow, the gravitas of Superman and the levity of Big.
Yeah.
My vocabulary is not going to be that way. I really liked it. I had a good time. I laughed, didn't cry, but I still laughed. A good time. Good movie.
It was a good movie. Yeah.
Guys went boom. Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and I have to admit I liked it more the second time around than I did the first time. I think the first time I liked it, but I was still sort of unsure about how it fit in. I really like the moves that DC has been making in the last few months. I wasn't a huge fan of Aquaman, but it was a ton of fun.
I think it's what it needs. I mean, after, unfortunately, the Batman, Superman, Justice League, the fun factor wasn't exactly the most dominant thing. And going back to fun, while it may not work for everything, for Shazam, it definitely worked, the fun factor.
Yeah.
Well, it had to be. I mean, you had a 14-year-old boy in the body of a 30-something-year-old man.
Oh, could still have gone dark. Could have still gone dark.
That's true. That's true.
No, I had a real blast. I really liked his character. I loved the Foster family.
Yeah.
Although I think his parents might be the nicest bad parents I've ever seen in a film.
They are the ideal. They are the total ideal foster parents.
Yeah. Like, what I remember is when we were sitting in the theater, I remember leaning over a couple times being like, yeah, right, because that's real. Like.
I just thought it was funny that every 5 minutes they're like, where are our kids? where are our kids? Come to dinner, kids. Where'd they go? Yeah. And now all of their children are superheroes. They're never going to be in the house. I'm like, they're just not going to know.
Are they going to remain oblivious? That's the real question for Shazam, too.
Well, we need somebody to fill that seventh seat. Maybe it's one of the parents.
Maybe. But you know what? I have to admit, that was probably the most lovable foster family shown on screen. Usually, you have really dysfunctional, angry kids. To be honest, it was a nice break to have really beautiful kids. Really nice kids.
Yeah.
Well, the parents really set the tone for the home, I think, in this particular one. I mean, whether or not they're realistic is the term of realism in a movie like Shazam is just right out the window for me.
It's very true. Yeah.
You know, when your second villain that we haven't met yet is a caterpillar with a voice box attached, that's, the realism goes out the window.
It's so true. Yeah. Or you get transported, via magic subway. So, yeah.
That's the TTC,
I've taken the subway a lot.
Candy, but guess what? You end up at Kipling. That's the TTC.
You know, shout out to my friends in Philadelphia, if any of them are listening, because there was so much Philly and so much Toronto in this film that I just felt like I was totally home.
Nice.
It was really cool. There are parts we were sitting there watching. I'm like, I don't know if that's the Gardener or if that's actually where the Rocky Steps are. How are they shooting this right
now? What's going on? Yeah.
I liked it. I didn't mind the villain either. I thought the villain was he wasn't super interesting, but he was better than a lot of the Marvel villains.
You got Mark Strong as he's a great actor.
He's a good actor.
Like, he could have been playing a popcorn salesperson, and he'd still
come on a popcorn salesman. Yeah,
Mark Strong, you could do this. Like,
pull it off.
I got popcorn for you. Yeah. I have popcorn for you.
You want my popcorn?
You want popcorn?
Wow, this is already an interesting episode. Now, you want my popcorn, don't you?
For anybody who just tuned in. Yeah.
That's right. They tuned in at that point. Yeah. Or if they just tuned out, as we went that way.
I think that the interesting thing about the villain is that I don't think you totally saw him coming, right? So because he wasn't a super interesting, I think sometimes I was surprised by just the depth of how, I don't know, villainous is the wrong word, but how committed he was to the path that he chosen. That caught me by surprise a little bit.
Yeah, and he actually says at one point, he says, I am not pure of heart. When he gets in there, he's like, I've spent years deciding this, and it's like, dang, you okay.
Yeah.
This was no accident.
There's a Dr. Phil episode I remember from ages ago where he made this one comment, because he has all these Dr. Philisms, and he says, it takes 100 attaboys to make up for one you little... and I think if any film is going to exemplify that Dr. Philism, it's the experience of the villain in Shazam. Mm.
It takes
one guy.
How
one
many time. Attaboys?
100 attaboys. One you little.
I absolutely adored every minute that Zachary Levi was on screen.
Oh yeah,
There was such joy in his Shazam.
He does youthful well. Like that kind of childhood in an adult body, he did that really well. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought the characters actually worked. They actually played well off of their older selves. The younger self seemed like the older self, even when the brothers and sisters got in on the act.
Yeah.
And Adam Brody.
Yeah.
Right.
The OC.
Yeah. How awesome was that? Yeah.
Whoever was the casting director did a good job getting people to align with personalities, and it was just a very likable cast.
Yeah.
And I think that made the movie really great, because it would be really hard to have a youthful look at a superhero things if you did not like the actors.
Mm-hmm.
But you like these actors. At least I like them.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally agreed. And I think they wouldn't have pulled off the comedy if you didn't like them as
actors. Oh, absolutely not. Yeah.
Yeah, it worked. It worked because he was so enthusiastic about it. Originally, this was supposed to be a much bigger film.
Hmm.
It's produced by The Rock, by Dwayne Johnson, and he's supposed to play Black Adam. So he still intends on doing that, but apparently, so he says, as it was his idea to cut the film in half, which sort of explains to me why Dr. Savannah may be back for the next one, because it was probably one movie.
Right.
That they chopped in half, because Johnson said, there's just way too much happening. Let's just push me out and we'll do me in Shazam 2.
I'm glad. I don't like when it's become so cluttered with too many characters, too many storylines, and the next thing is just is a big mess.
Or they have to rush the ending because they're like, man, we've been doing this for a while, so suddenly it loses all character development, and you're like, what? How did we get here?
Well, it kind of reminds me of watching Daredevil on Netflix and seeing a movie and trying to cram everything in like 2 hours versus having the luxury of having 10 episodes in one season. You get to know people. You get to discover this. And so I'm glad if this is where they went for two movies instead of one, I'm glad they went the direction.
Yeah.
Yeah, it opens more opportunity for characters to breathe. I think that's really key. In any movie, not just a movie like this. Like, you know, this is why blockbusters now are, well, I mean, even this one was 2 hours and 15 minutes. Like, you know, they get longer and longer. Part of that is because of how much you have to get in. Like, Endgame is this weekend.
It's 3 hours.
Three hours!
I actually saw a Facebook post about, like, when's the right time to go pee?
To go to the bathroom. Yeah,
because basically you may not be able to hold it for 3 hours. So here are the spots in the film where you can step out.
Or you can have a Foley catheter.
Yeah, well, sure, if you're that committed. Yeah.
After 21 movies, you need to be that committed.
I'm a pee bag. Come on.
That's right. You can miss a few minutes because you're going to see it again in the next showing anyway. So just go pee at a different moment. But it's like the only reason I can even justify a film like that being that long is because they're actually trying to culminate 21 films. So, okay, mm-hmm. I'll give them a pass. But we've seen them stretch and stretch and stretch. But it's so, even though this one's over 2 hours, it didn't feel like it was too long.
It moved nicely.
Yeah.
Good pace. It clicks along at a good pace, Yeah. No, I it was solid. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Do you have a favorite part? Like, I kind of have a favorite funny part.
My favorite part is still probably the superhero training montage.
Right.
I adore the superhero training montage.
Like when he's flossing?
Oh yeah, even though I know it was in the trailer or the bulletproof scene, which almost entirely in the trailer, but I still thought it was funny.
That's my favorite scene, just because I think it's hilarious that they're going in to buy beer. Like, thing is, I'm an adult. I would like your finest beer, please.
The thing is, how they responded to the beer is exactly how a child thinking that it's gonna be the greatest fluid to drink ever, and they sip it, and next thing is like, and then right after, junk food. It's like, yep.
Sounds about right. Yeah.
Adolescent thing.
Yeah.
Forget the beer. I want some Pringles.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. It's like, we don't even have a fake ID. Dude, I am the fake ID. It's good. Oh, it's so good. What did you guys think of the way that the film sort of handled the idea of being worthy? Because it's a key theme with the transition of power from the old Shazam to Billy's character. What did you think about that idea and how it was expressed in the film?
I think it was interesting because Billy was not perfect. Billy came from a broken background. And it doesn't even really fully explicitly say why he was worthy.
Hmm.
But something he had in him, some of the big spirits, I don't know how to explain, but somehow he was the one who would be chosen, who could take this crazy, phenomenal power and respect it for what it was supposed to be used for.
Well, I mean, it took him a while to get there, right? But
it took him.
That's the thing that's so crazy to me about it. Like, is that, you know, the first act of this film, he's a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
He breaks into a police car in the first time we meet him, right? As a teenager.
Yeah. Well, but he's on an interesting noble quest, right? So it's one of those, like, I have to do some stuff that's not great, but because it's for a good or noble cause, that's where my worthiness comes from, right? He's trying to find his birth mom.
One of the things I caught the second time is the wizard doesn't give him a choice. There's no test for Billy because the seven deadlies are gone.
Yeah.
And what he actually says is that, wait, you're all that I have. He's choosing people systematic.
Yeah. Which is interesting because if you look at the Foster family, Billy's little sister, the one with the glasses, she would have been considered more worthy because her heart was always protecting and empathy.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe the wizard just didn't see her, but it's like, I would have picked her instead of Billy to be the person initially, but it's true.
Yeah. It's also kind of interesting to me, so the wizard spends all of this time, right? Because it starts, what, in the 50s or the...
70s, 74. 70s,
right? With the...
Savannah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so he spent all of this time trying to find the right worthy candidate.
He didn't have Google search.
Well, more than that, though, like, so, the initial question was, like, how do you define worthy? What does it come from? You got to wonder if the wizard knew what worthy was, or if he was just hoping, I'll know it when I see it. So, kind of close. Okay, come, let's check it out. As opposed to actually having a clear idea.
Now, this, I just thought of this right now. Since this is the DC Universe, what if the wizard acquired Clark Kent?
So if in the 80s he had picked Kent, but clearly he must have known that Kent, he would have had to have known that Kent already had his power.
But can you imagine the power panel of power? Imagine Kryptonian.
A magic Kryptonian?
Kryptonian Shazam? Yeah. Whoa!
But Superman's already, like, supposed to, he's almost deified as a superhero, right? Like,
I just thought with the massive
no
power.
More room for
imagine
power.
Just, like, power by power.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, see, it's interesting because Superman, even in his youth, you know, is viewed to have had more character than Billy does.
Yes.
Yeah. Talk about worthiness, right? That's always been the big theme with Superman. And all of the actors who played him, from Christopher Reeve on, they're often interviewed around, like, how does it feel to be carrying the weight of being this perfect being?
Mm-hmm.
Because Superman is always depicted as perfect.
Yeah.
He always makes the right choice. He never gives into selfishness or his desire. He, like, it's all built into who he is and his character and the weight that he carries in having to be that responsible for everybody else, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. In many ways, I guess Billy Batson is the most human of Supermen.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
In so many ways. Actually, it's interesting because they actually talk about quite frequently how there is no one good or pure.
Yeah.
You know, you could wax scripture on that if you wanted to, but it's interesting. It says, he even says in that moment, he says, you're looking for good, pure people. I'm not one of them. And when Savannah is there at the beginning, Savannah says, you seek a pure soul, old man, but no one is worthy. Mm. And he keeps trying to find that person who is worthy of this power because he says that they picked wrong last time.
Right.
And they don't want to make that mistake again. But I thought that was a fascinating way to handle this because it's not like Billy is this great kid, model citizen, and, oh, he'll be great. They picked this reckless kid who, yeah, he may be on a bit of a noble quest looking for his mom.
Yeah.
But
he's not Clark Kent.
He's no Kent.
He's a whole lot of trouble on the way there, yeah.
Yeah. And doing so intentionally, like, to... Again, you could argue the nobility of his quest, but he's doing it intentionally to make the decision.
What do you think is the line between, like, mischievous and actually problematic, though? Because,
I mean,
generally, right? Generally mischievous, like, even when a kid is mischievous, it's kind of fun to watch, and you're like, oh, they're just, you know, a little bit of a troublemaker. But there is a line, and then you hit the line, and it's no longer just a little bit of mischief. It's like a problematic pattern.
I think problematic when you start entering cruelty.
Yeah.
When you maliciously go get, just, like, for example, if Billy took the cop car and crashed it.
Right.
That would have been considered, like, okay, you're problematic. But he just simply wanted information, and he left.
Yeah.
So even though trapping the cops in the pawn shop was not the best thing on his part, there was no real harm given to them. That's the one thing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and, you know, compare that the way that Savannah comes into it. He's actually in some ways more innocent when he arrives and is tempted away, as opposed to Billy, who is less innocent, but finds, you know, when he, the things he does, he beats up bullies because they're bullying, you know, he,
but it always takes him a bit to get there.
It takes him a bit to get there. Sure.
Yeah,
that's interesting. So in this case, a film like this, worthiness is actually a bit of a journey. But it's somebody who wants to make that journey in some ways.
Well, and I think it's also just a really clear message on, like, worthiness and perfection are not synonyms. Right? So it's not about being perfect.
Which is, it's basically, that's a departure from traditionally, if you look at, like, what worthy is.
Yeah.
It's having these characteristics and attributes which are unworldly. And I'd say that a lot of movies these days, looking at heroes, purposely make them flawed.
Yeah.
Because they realize, unless you're that perfect Clark Kent particular persona, no one's going to be that way.
Right.
No one. And in many ways, that is, from a business standpoint, more profitable to your audience for a lot of kids or families who are like, I'm not perfect, but if the movie itself says, yeah, our character, our hero is not perfect,
yeah.
but you can still be a hero,
yeah.
even in your flaws.
I think that's why Batman is a lot of people's favorite.
I love Batman.
Because Batman technically has
he's
no actual superpowers.
He's so messed up.
He's pretty messed up, and he's got money, and he just, like, has gadgets and tries really hard. Anybody, theoretically, could get some gadgets and try really hard. So Batman is achievable or attainable as a goal. But, you know, getting bit by a radioactive spider, meeting a wizard off a magical subway, all of these things are less
achievable,
yeah,
you're traveling to DC, you just
right?
might meet
you
the
never
wizard.
Know.
You just might meet them.
Well, you know, it's interesting, too, because what you see in, not just in DC, but cultural superheroes. Remember, superheroes used to not be a thing.
Yeah.
Like, Superman was really the first real superhero on screen. And
yeah.
And he was the only one, better or for worse, for about 10 years. And he made some terrible movies, but he actually made some great classic films. And then in 89, Batman took over, and Superman's never been able to recover. They've never been able to make Superman proper again. They tried to make him in Superman Returns,
yeah.
and people said, oh, I don't like this guy, he's too perfect. So then they made Man of Steel, and they're
right.
like, that's not who Superman is,
right.
he's too imperfect.
Yeah.
Well, okay, because Superman doesn't make sense anymore in our culture, but Batman makes sense. And Batson, in some ways, is a blend of both.
Mm-hmm.
You've got that person who's imperfect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're right when you say worthy is something otherworldly because he's not Thor.
No.
No one can lift Thor's hammer,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Unless your Vision.
Unless your Vision, yes. Or Cap can move it. But I mean.
Yeah.
That's right. But I mean, he's none of those things.
But interesting you brought up.
Crossing universes.
Well,
it's messing with my mind.
I love it. But Steve Rogers, as Captain America. I remember one of the lines I loved from the first Avenger, the movie, was when the doctor, I can't remember, Stanley Tucci's character asked him, do you hate Nazis?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you want to kill Nazis? And Steve says, I hate bullies.
Hmm.
And I think that resonates with
mm-hmm.
even Shazam. It's like
yeah.
with a time when his, what's his brother, his foster brother's name? The one with the cripple.
Freddie.
Yeah.
Freddie.
And he gets knocked down. And I think we all can feel anger towards those two jerks
yeah.
who decide to do that, like the drive up, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And when Billy fights them off, we cheer because it's like he is doing exactly what I think a lot of us would love to do.
Yep.
Fight back against the bullies because we hate bullies.
Mm.
So I think that's why looking at Billy's character, how he's imperfect, but he's not a mean kid.
Yeah.
And that, I think, makes him a likable character.
Because
mm-hmm. Bruce Wayne, I love Batman, but he's mean. Like, Billy's not mean.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And so the movie rides on the fact that even with all the powers, and he could have killed people, not being mean
yeah.
almost is the thing that saves him.
How do you think that offsets with Savannah?
No, Savannah.
Dr. Savannah, because, you know, you talked about the 100 yippee-ki-yays for every whoopity-doo or whatever you
attaboy,
said.
Attaboy.
Yeah.
Dude,
John McClane.
100 attaboys for every Kanye, I think you just said. what I heard.
John McClane.
You know, it's a good thing to bring up because look at the experience of being told that he wasn't worthy, right?
Mm.
And, I mean, that was obviously reinforced very regularly by his father and brother, which you see. But the impact that had, like, he dedicated the rest of his life, every penny that he made, to driving vengeance or being vindicated for that reality and that experience.
To be an Avenger.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Crossing universes again.
Wrong universe.
But to the point, like, and that festered and bubbled,
yes.
right? And so now I think about it, similar to kind of your point, Derek, like, what you feed grows, right?
Yeah.
So feeding that made it grow and turn him into like this completely maligned human being, right? Who was, you know, murdered his family without the bat of an eye, like could easily move forward that way. Versus a Billy who, like even when Freddie was being beat up and he first walks away and you're like, oh, kind of disappointed in him. And then he kind of musters up the courage and comes back and does something about it. Like he's nurturing that.
Since we're talking about Billy and just maybe it's a little tangent, but I think for me, when you talk about the favorite part of the movie, maybe not favorite as liked it,
mm-hmm.
but when he finally meets his biological mom.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's traumatic.
And it's traumatic because she is the treasure he's been trying to search and find. Yeah. And when he finally finds her, she is nothing like what he wanted her to be. And you feel terrible for Billy. Like, absolutely just like, oh my gosh. This, the fact that she totally did not care about the toy. The thing, the little compass.
Yeah.
What's this?
Find your way home.
So much meaning to him. Yeah. But the other interesting part about that, too, is do you notice how he walked into that with the apology of, like, it was my fault because he chased the compass, right? And the, I don't know if it's the redemption that he gets from, despite the fact that she totally rejected him, but that it really clears up that, no, it wasn't about you chasing that toy, right? Like, yeah.
And I like the fact after he, like, after the talking, he says, I have to go back to my real family now.
Yeah.
My real family.
Yeah.
You know what I thought was really interesting about that particular scene is how it shows you how faulty memory can be. Because here you are having two people remembering the same dialogue with very different connotations. Like, your mother's not really going pro, all right? But the when he remembers his, oh, that's okay, your mother, it's all playful, it's fun. It's like, oh, we were having a great day. Yeah. And she's talking about how awful it was and how stressed out she was in that moment. She just couldn't handle it anymore. And I thought, man, that's a fascinating look at perspective. Like, just in that one moment, it took this one scene that he has clinged to his whole life and being told that, guess what, there's another side to that that you haven't seen. That story is more than you understood as a child. Mm-hmm. And there was a real loss of innocence for him in that moment. Not similar, I mean, Savannah loses his innocence as a child, but in a very different sort of way.
But it's also true, too. So it's part of why eyewitness testimony is so problematic, right? And like the court system, because we remember things differently. And then every time we recall the memory, we reinforce our belief of it, right? And then add to that the fact that nobody likes cognitive dissonance. So I don't like when what I believe and what I see don't match. Mm-hmm. So I filter everything I see to match my belief system.
Right.
So every following experience is intentionally filtered by our brains to reinforce the belief, the memory, the feeling, right?
And both he and the villain believe that they were to blame.
Yep.
And only Billy gets relief that it's not his fault. And relief is an odd word to use because it's a very painful way to learn it. But he doesn't have to carry that closure.
Yeah. That was when I think of that part in the movie, the rest of the movie was fun, but that one part, I think, was the twist. I was like, wow.
Didn't see that
coming.
Yeah,
it was like, because you're rooting, I think, seeing the movie through Billy's eyes, you were hoping that the reunion would have been amazing. Like, for those who
this
are Christian.
This has been his quest.
Like the prodigal son.
Yeah.
You saw that. But when you find out, no, this is a woman who just doesn't care. It breaks your heart as it broke Billy's heart.
Yeah,
and she really doesn't. Like, she literally says, you know, this isn't a good time for me. And it's just, that moment is... I think favorite is the wrong moment, but that was the most impactful moment in the whole film.
Yeah.
A whole film for me. I thought it was really, really strong.
But I think since we're talking about that, it just brings the point of family, too. Because at first, when Billy is introduced to his foster family, he doesn't want to be there because his dream is to meet his to find his biological mom.
Yeah.
And then when he gets closure with that, and going back to his real family, the theme of family becomes much more pronounced of, like, what is family? What does it mean to be in a part of a community that you find you are safe?
Yeah, I was just going to say it's because his definition of family changed, right? So sometimes the family you're born into doesn't match the place where you actually fit in, you belong, you're part of a community, you're welcomed.
Yeah, you know what I liked about this more than a lot of other films I've seen is that the definition of family actually was formed around a family.
Mm-hmm.
And so often in films, what you see is the brokenness of the family, and the new family is brought together by some other thing.
Right.
So Fast and the Furious, for example, they always say, we're family. You know, I know that they mumble growl it out. He talks about how they're family, but they're not. Most of them aren't.
Yeah.
But they are because they're, you know... Mm-hmm.
You drive fast
ride
cars.
Or die. Yeah, ride or die. This is our thing. Mm-hmm. But this was a real family on screen that was actually enjoyable to see.
Yeah.
And they cared for one another as a family. Now, they were a collection of people who had been brought together, but they lived under the same roof. They were foster brothers and sisters. Yeah. The parents liked having dinner with them, encouraged them to talk with one another.
I actually thought
that
was amazing, the family meals where they would have their hands in. And the first time, Billy's like, nope, because this is not a real family. And at the end, hands in, and everyone's like...
Everybody's in,
Like, ooh, that was like...
They said grace. Can we talk about that for a minute? They actually say grace in this film multiple times.
Yeah.
I would I have to wax. I would say poetic, but this isn't poetic at all. on this, just for a moment, I thought it was. I think I know it's all part of the Shazam lore, and I know DC does Gods and Men better than Marvel ever has.
Yeah.
Even Thor, it's sort of like, oh yeah, sure, he's God.
Yeah.
It's
a sidebar,
But he's fighting the seven deadly sins in this film.
Yeah.
Like, it is pointing to a highly theological thing. Now, it is interesting to me, because I was really interested to see where they would go with it. So even with using the seven deadly sins, like, he quotes Gandhi... And he says, no, wait, that might have been Yoda.
Yeah.
He has the power of Zeus. Like, it's very it's very Greco-Roman theology, whatnot. But
even interesting to that is, like, Shazam is technically an acronym. So they don't really talk about in the movie.
It is?
It is, yes, it is.
It's an acronym, and it stands for all the powers that are infused, right?
That is
so it's the
Zeus.
Wisdom of Solomon,
that's right.
The strength of Hercules. I think Atlas is speed. Zeus.
This is
power, maybe?
Power of Zeus.
Yeah.
Really?
And Achilles. And so I think that's the, like...
And Mercury for speed of
Mercury. Oh, Mercury's speed. Mercury's
speed. Mercury.
Yeah.
Who's the exclamation point?
That would be... I don't know.
Punctuation God. Helvetica. And the...
Yeah, but I mean... I read that online, like that didn't really come up too much in the film, but it is.
He does say that though, like when he passes transfers the power.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's all, and so if you think about it, like, and we're talking about worthiness and family and like what but the power is an amalgam of the best of these six really kind of powerful.
But imagine if they had the power, like, yeah, like say all those powerful things like speed and strength.
Yeah.
Where's the compassion?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Where is grace? Where is empathy? Yeah. It's very, like, those powers are very tangible, for lack of a better word, alpha powers.
Yep.
But they're not really, if you think of it, this movie was not, the strength of the team was not about, like, we're all so strong. It's like, we love each other.
Yeah.
And that's where the strength came from.
Yeah, that's actually a really great point, talking about power in the film and how it's viewed. Because Savannah actually says, you know, when he's in the boardroom, you know, this is what power looks like, or something to that effect.
Mm.
Which, sidebar, as a Smallville fan, I love to see Lex Luthor's dad be just as big a jerk as his dad.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. Lionel Luthor is back, and he's no better. you create terrible children, Lionel Luthor. But he talks
stop
about...
Stop that.
Stop being such a terrible father. But he, you know, this use of power is something to be acquired.
Mm.
But actually, Shazam... says at the end, what good is power if you've got no one to share it with?
Yeah.
Which is somewhat ironic, because that's all Savannah wants him to give it to, it, but he gives it to his brothers and sisters, you know?
Yeah. But I think, to Derek's point, like, that's really where compassion and empathy like come into play really powerfully. And it takes him the whole movie, so 2 hours-ish, to really understand that reality, right? To recognize that where the power is in sharing it, and in having his family stand with him.
He even says, he also says as well, if a superhero can't save his family, he's not much of a hero.
Yeah.
So family is very closely tied in this nature of power. And it's interesting, because he doesn't really want it either. He's not looking for it. It falls into his lap.
I'm going to do a bit of a branding crossover again. DC. So he's talking about family. Compared Clark Kent and Bruce Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
Clark Kent, yes, he comes from Krypton. Planet is obliterated, but he has Martha and...
John and Martha.
Yeah. And they are nurturing. So he learns power through the lens of compassion, caring. Bruce Wayne, his parents are killed. So he has vengeance as his motivation, and he's the guy who needs a lot more attaboys because he's broken. Savannah, you can only imagine if his storyline was he had a father and a brother who are like, you know what? Yeah, it's not great, but you know what? Attaboy.
Yeah.
Attaboy. Of course, it would make a good movie because you'd have no supervillain, but...
Yeah. But it's
no conflict.
I'm with you on just the impact of this, those things that we may not think about, and how they, again, just snowball.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's interesting because I think that whole conversation in the car surrounds him, them saying, you have to stand up and be a man. His brother's bullying him and yells at the younger one and says, you know, you have to stand up and be a man. Yeah. You can't let people push you around.
Which is exactly what they're doing to him, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's a little irony in that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's no wonder that his drive of his, the motivation of his life is to acquire greater power. Mm. And again, it's so interesting to me how they use the seven deadlies in this film because, you know, he's there with his dad, and his dad offers him money. He offers him the company. He says, ah, there it is, greed. And then he lets greed kill him, right?
Yep.
Which, you know, is pretty... Ironic isn't the word. It's not that, but it's
my. It's almost an allegory. Like
it's definitely an allegory.
Yeah.
Yeah, like he's killed by his own greed in this particular scene, and what is the one that he keeps in his eye is it envy?
Envy.
Yeah. The one that he keeps in the eye. Yeah. He never comes out. He's the little one that no one wants to play with. Yeah. You know.
Do you think that that's an intentional message around envy being the most ensnaring of the seven deadly sins for anyone? Or do you think that was really just specific to Savannah?
No, I think it would be indicative of most people because people crave... I mean, like, people are driven often by what they don't have. Mm. They see someone who has something. And it's that lusting after that thing they don't have which creates drive. Mm. Bad motivation... But it happens to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't have to be, like, I mean, for money itself. It could be for affirmation. It can be for acknowledgement of just who I am. So I think it was... Actually, I'm really glad Envy was the character, the deadly sin you never saw until the very end. Because if anything, it could be the deadliest. Because it's not the one that has the greatest strength in terms of physical strength. But it can move your heart.
Yeah.
It's interesting to me because a lot of the family could have argued, or not a lot of them, but certainly Freddy could have actually been that same person
Absolutely.
In a lot of ways. Because he says to him, he says, you know, you wish it was you. He says, you're freaking right. I do. Nobody sees me.
Yeah.
Like Savannah, probably as a child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No one
sees me.
It's interesting that they call, maybe I'm harkening back to an early part of a conversation, but they refer to Shazam as their champion.
Yeah.
You talked about him, you know, talk about them being powerful and where power comes from.
Mm-hmm.
The way that they refer to him is, oh, he will be the better fighter.
Yeah.
But that's not what wins the battle.
No.
In fact, what wins the battle is him just plucking the eye out and... Technically, he doesn't destroy anything. The seven deadlies still exist. They're just sort of ensnared.
I just thought, as a sequel, if I had to go, if I was a writer, which I'm not, but if I was a writer, it'd be interesting to have in the sequel Freddy enticed by Envy. Because for some reason, say Billy still gets all of the accolades and all the credit, but inside he's still driven by, like, someone look at me. I'm just as good or better.
Yeah.
And so you go where now you have this. It's like, we're a family.
Yeah.
We have each other, but for Freddy, that's not good enough. It's like, I want to be bigger than the family. Someone look at me and put me as the hero.
Yeah.
Because you can see that, because the actor who played Freddy, great job.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and when he was angry and really just pissed off at Billy,
yeah,
it didn't seem like acting. It seemed like, wow, he's really, really upset. Great acting.
Well, they'd had a fight right before they shot that scene. No, they didn't.
You know,
he really was pissed off at him.
Okay, so I have a random sidebar question about that. So the seven deadly sins, how on earth is sloth any kind of powerful, like, villainous sin? Oh, you're really lazy? Just sit down. Well, he's one of the seven deadlies. Pride, greed, lust, envy, gluttony, wrath,
I guess,
and
if
sloth.
You could... Maybe a sloth is if you have the capacity to help someone and help them immensely, sloth just says, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Just
sloth doesn't engage.
Yeah.
Right.
Like,
Sloth just lets everything pass. So there is that aspect to it. We were talking about it on the way home today, after having seen it again, and one of the things that we noticed is that you couldn't really tell which one was which.
Right.
Like
they didn't physically resemble in a way.
I think that in some ways they did. Like, we saw that greed had extra arms. Mm-hmm. I think lust had the really long tongue. Like, there were different sort of... The big anger or wrath was the enormous one. But ultimately, they all looked the same. And I was thinking about this on the way home, too. I was thinking... Because he makes a comment, lust should have been a lot hotter, which is true. But at the same time... What I liked is that they were all ugly.
Yeah.
You don't need to tell them apart because each one of them does damage.
Yep.
In and of themselves, they're not supposed to look attractive because here we are seeing them in their purest forms.
Yeah.
All beasts.
Yeah, I think if like when I saw the movie, I was talking with my wife after, and we said, of all the things, we liked the movie, but those images, which I really liked, they were scary images.
Yeah.
They were really frightening.
Yep.
Yeah, that's actually, I would love to take Anders to that. Anders will be 9, and I thought, you know what, most of this he could hack. I think the beasts would be too much for him, because they are terrifying looking.
Oh, yeah, especially the one with, like, the full row of, like, body teeth. Like,
oh, that gluttony.
Yeah.
That's obviously gluttony, right? He opens his belly, and there's...
Yeah.
You know, but I actually appreciate that now, having seen it again, because it was like... They didn't glamorize them.
No.
And it wasn't like, oh, that one's red, so it must be lust. They're all just dirty, nasty things that are out to destroy you. And in many cases do in this film.
Yeah, and sometimes I think adding a visual to that, like, makes a... changes the impact.
Yeah.
Right? It's easy for us to just use the language of, seven deadly sins. That's not a thing. Nobody talks about it. Not a big deal, right? Lust will be Jessica Rabbit and, you know...
Wow, you just dated yourself on that
totally
one.
Jessica
did.
Rabbit. Wow.
I totally did. Yeah. But I think when we add, like, an image that is closer to the truth of it, it changes the reality. So I think about, kind of connected, kind of unrelated, like, I remember reading the book This Present Darkness.
Oh, yeah.
Ages ago, right?
Oh, my goodness.
Frank
Grimm.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I know. You thought Jessica Rabbit was a reference.
Oh, I just went back to the 80s.
That's it. Well, amazing. Yeah.
Hey,
now that
kids,
we're all 85
there. Check your Kindle and see if Frank Peretti's
This Present Darkness
is available. It's probably free.
Right. It's that old. But one of the things about it that really had an impact on me is that it created, like, this really powerful imagery that it attached to something that I couldn't conceptualize otherwise, right? So, I mean, the book's all about spiritual warfare. It's a fictional story. But imagining and adding the description of, like, the demons and the evil spirits creates a reality to it that sometimes we can't conceptualize. And I think this, like, the Seven Deadly Sins and Shazam is the same thing, right? It shows you that it's ugly because they are ugly. And the level of impact based on just how gruesome those...
I could see a lot of families so unhappy with that because it's almost, I hate to say it, but I find that in some movies that are PG and lower, the evil has become sterile.
Yeah.
It becomes like you mentioned red, like you could say that lust is red and envy is green. And that's the way you identify. And I find for... That is actually a disservice to these things, like, because I don't know if the people want them to be not as scary, but I think these things should be scary. But families might not like that. They say it's too frightening. My child's now traumatized, whatever, but...
Yeah.
Oh, well.
But sometimes you need that, the mirror
of
the reality,
totally agree.
Right?
I totally agree with that,
yeah. But I think you're right. Like, we work so hard to sanitize our world and minimize impacts and minimize consequences.
Yeah.
And how appropriate is it then, since we're talking about it in this context, that, I mean, what's Shazam's identifying visual is its light.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's actual light coming out of his chest, and they all have it. They come out of the smoke, and they've got this light-up lightning bolt. And I saw in a making of that they actually, that was actually
it's an
lit.
Light. Yep.
There's an actual light on there because they wanted the natural lighting on his face in the dark scenes.
Yeah.
It wasn't just CGI. It wasn't just a yellow beam. They actually had battery packs in the back to light it up and give different lighting effects.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the key identifier in this dark, smoky, villainous realm. And, you know, Strong, for as well as he did, could be argued as kind of a mustache-twirling villain in parts, you know, in moments.
Yeah.
But when he really unleashes and you see the darkness that is coming, that is extending out of him, who have you got as these six Avengers, no pun intended, that are bringing light or lightning shooting from their fists, you know, even if he's using it to charge cell phones. Blowing phones up. That's a pretty powerful visual as well. And one, I think, that talks about real power and genuineness.
Yeah.
Power. What is power? What can power do?
Turn on the lights, apparently.
Throw criminals out the window so they can get free junk food.
Well, so interestingly on that, though, even if you talk about like his lightning as the power, so while he's still figuring himself out and getting it together, his the fact that he's treating his power kind of as something trivial ends up causing a huge accident, right? And so he does manage to kind of save the bus at the last minute and nobody dies. And he's like, look at how amazing I was. I just saved all those people on the bus. And Freddy's like, dude, you created that problem.
Yeah.
Which I think is also a really interesting parallel of when you don't take power seriously and you think of it as something trivial.
It's the Spider-Man thing. Right?
I was going to say, you're treading really close
Marvel.
To Spider-Man here.
Well, fair enough. But you end up, whether it's intentional or otherwise, there's like a hurricane of destruction in your path.
But that's what it's all about. I think like since in the DC universe with Batman, because he has no superpowers, he's very aware power in the wrong hands is bad. That's why, like, watching, like, Batman Superman, he was always paranoid because Superman is one individual who's got this immense amount of godlike power.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of saying, hey, let's see how we can tap into this, he's like, no, he's got to put
we
down.
We got to rein it in.
Just. And so it's interesting that Shazam, with all the power has, you have this god power in children and youth who have a very, like their, I guess, bolt emblem, very light look of the world.
Mm.
Hmm. Even in strip clubs.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that one. Oh, yeah, I forgot.
Of all the places to think of, this is the first place that came to your mind.
Yeah,
I totally forgot about that scene.
Yeah.
Oh. Oh, man. Oh. That was...
Woo!
And Freddy, hey. Good old Freddy.
We're going to need more money, I think he says at that point. To be fair, they never go in the strip club as a camera. They stay outside. But anyway, that's neither here nor there.
It's interesting, too, because since we're talking about Superman and stuff like that, the money actors. So Sean Levy is obviously... Not Sean Levy.
Zachary Levy.
Sorry, Sean Levy is actually one of the producers, I think. Zach Levy is cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like how Gal Gadot, when she started with Wonder Woman, she signed a contract and is way, way, way underpaying her.
Sure, because she was unknown.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, it'll be interesting to see if these Shazam movies start picking up steam, making $700 million, $1 billion, is it going to affect casting?
Yeah.
Because it's like, this movie was apparently only like 50, 60 million?
I think it was 80.
80 million, okay.
That's what I heard.
Which is still low for...
That was cheap.
Yeah.
It was cheap for a superhero film.
It's scary that we live in a day and age when like 80 million for something is considered cheap.
Oh my gosh, yes.
I know it is, but
yeah.
So I just think it's going to be interesting, I mean, for the whole DC universe, because I mean, like, if you can still pump them out, like, this is where I think the Justice League went totally crazy, where they spent how many hundred millions of just ridiculous amount of money, and just, it didn't look good.
Yeah.
I hope they go back to the whole thing of, like, storytelling with good characters.
Yeah. But that doesn't require big names.
It doesn't.
It totally doesn't. But big names is what draws the box office numbers.
Well, who would have thought 5 years ago that when you were talking about DC, you'd be talking about Wonder Woman, Shazam, and Aquaman.
Yeah.
And that's not... I know Wonder Woman is one of the Holy Trinity, as they refer to them as the three. But she'd never done well on... She'd never had the chance to really shine on screen. She just wasn't... She wasn't going to do it. And they made this killer movie, which changed everything. And Batman flopped.
It was the turning point for DC, because DC movies up to that point really have been struggling.
But you know what? Here's something. I think one reason why Superman and Batman did poorly is because we have seen so many different like versions.
Mm.
And so we all have a favorite Batman or favorite Superman.
Yeah.
To be honest, the only Wonder Woman I knew before Gal Gadot was Linda Carter.
Right.
And that's a 70s TV show, which is cheesy in itself.
Yeah.
So I didn't have any expectations. And then, great movie. Aquaman. Aquaman has been the wimpiest character in the DC. No, for the longest time.
So true.
It's true.
Gets made fun of all the time.
He's riding on a seahorse.
Yeah.
He's a blonde guy who's like, hi, I'm going to control the fish here.
Yeah.
But Jason Momoa, great casting.
Yeah.
I mean, guy totally revamped what we thought of Aquaman. And now Shazam. I think the last Shazam I saw was a 70s show, which was horrible.
Well, because the comic, like, started in the 50s, right? So, none of the stories themselves are new, but the way we're capturing them, visualizing them, is
and we didn't have a template to work with, so you can do anything you want, which I think helped that three.
Yeah,
and I still think the Batman Matt Reeves movie in the future is still going to be so difficult to do it because people are like, well, what Batman do you want him to be? Do you want to be like this Batman or that Batman?
Yeah.
Or,
if DC's really turning the ship around here with great storytelling, I think we could really see some great things moving forward.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know? Absolutely.
But I think the difference, like if we look at Shazam, if we look at Wonder Woman, if we look at Aquaman, it's not necessarily the visuals of the films because they're all visually stunning. It's the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And the secret in the dialogue, sometimes it's levity, right? Like Shazam is all about levity. It's light, it's fun, with some pretty dark themes actually and really kind of heavy pieces to it. But they know how to kind of poke fun at it and lighten it up.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman, it was the compassion. Like there's something in the dialogue that changes how you connect with the characters that's different than what has been done in the past, where it's intended to be not approachable, not attainable, completely not connected with.
Guys, this is great, and I'm loving this, but we should probably screen it or skip it. Shazam, screen it or skip it.
I'm buying this Blu-ray when it comes out first day. I'm screening this thing, man. I love this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it too. I totally screen it.
Yeah, I'd say screen it, seeing as it's the only superhero movies people are going to be talking about this weekend. This
what are you talking about? Batman's coming out.
Batman in a couple of years, but the Shazam's the only thing that people are talking about this weekend. So I would say screen it. I mean, when you can't get your tickets to see Endgame, this is a very good second pick. And if you're not going to go see anything because you're spending your money on Endgame, definitely see it when it comes out because it's really well done.
Mm-hmm.
Not just because it's fun. I've seen fun movies that are not good, but this is a pretty good fun movie.
Hey, question. Shazam versus Thanos. You'd win.
Shazam versus Thanos. What are you, a monster? What is that about? Thanos with the Infinity Gauntlet?
Without the Infinity Gauntlet.
Oh.
Probably Shazam.
That's a whole
other
podcast, I think.
That's, that'll be for Patreon subscribers, which we don't have. So that's... But for you at home, you can find us wherever podcasts are available. sound more game show voice there slipped in there. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify. You can find us on Alexa via Stitcher. And if you go to the Screenfish website, screenfish.net, go to the podcast page, you can download Fishing for More so that when you see the film, we'll give you some questions so that get the conversation started where you are as well. We will be back next week with the Infinity Warm-Up crew to talk about Endgame, that other superhero film that may or may not be coming out this
weekend.
Never
heard of
this. Little one.
Yeah,
never
just a tiny film. I'm going to see it on Saturday, so I should be done around Tuesday morning. seeing the film, I mean.
As long as you take your catheter. Yes.
As long as I have my catheter with me. But we will be back next week with our podcast on Endgame, so you can look forward to that. Mira, Derek, thank you so much. This was great and a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. Thanks for the invite. Yeah.
It was great.
Anytime.
Thanks, Steve.
You're welcome. You're welcome, Derek.
And tell him what he's won, folks.
You won an all-expense-paid trip home in your own car.
Wow! I'm so thrilled.
Seriously, thank you, guys. And for all of you at home, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.